Welcome to the Small Business Whole Health Podcast. We help you stay happy, healthy, and whole so your small business can thrive and stay vital in this ever-changing world. With holistic coaches and small business owners, Jill and Dan.
Hello, and welcome to our Small Business Whole Health Podcast. I'm Jill, and I'm here with my podcasting partner in podcast land, Dan.
Hey, hello. These intros are getting more and more elaborate.
I like them. So, and today we are talking about holistic lifestyle coaching because both Dan and I are qualified as holistic lifestyle coaches. And we're going to be talking about the difference between holistic lifestyle coaching and normal PT coaching or life coaching. And we're going to be telling you about the six foundation principles, which is what we base everything on. And finally, the only four doctors you'll ever need. How does that sound, Dan?
That sounds fascinating because when me and you met on the Czech courses, this was the thing I found most fascinating. So originally when we got into the Czech Institute and the Czech Academy, I thought it was going to be more for exercise, which it was because we learned how to assess people and how to coach efficient exercise and workouts. But then when I learned this stuff, it just blew me away and I found it way more interesting than just exercise. So yeah, I kind of wait to get into this because I could talk about this for 10 podcasts. Never mind, just one.
We might have to do that.
Yeah.
So yeah, both me, we met on the Holistic Lifestyle Coaching course. So that did change our lives in a little way as well, didn't it?
Yeah, it's really good. So depending on how much we get through this, I think we might have to do a mini series.
I think so, yeah. I was the same as you when I first did it because obviously I'm a Pilates teacher and I just went to learn a bit more about the body. But once I started on this route, it was like, what?
Yeah. It's a strange feeling because, you learn all these new things, but then at the same time, it reinforces things that you were already doing anyway, but you didn't know why.
Yeah.
Which is also fascinating, I thought.
Yeah. Both you and I have just been going back over our old manual and coming out with all the stuff that we wrote at the time. It's 3 years ago nearly now since we met on that course. So
yeah, I know, it flies, doesn't it?
I know. And then going back over it, it really makes, like, some of the stuff that I didn't understand at the time is the stuff that I now work in, like all the hormonal stuff, the cortisol, the stress levels, all of that kind of stuff. That was my first introduction to it. So probably for the last 3 years, I've just spent my time focusing on that thing. And this is probably what set me off it on that path in the first place.
Like you were saying, we were going through the manuals and there's so many triggers in there, which you think, oh yeah, actually, I really enjoy teaching people about that now. But when you go on the course and you read the manual for the first time and it's all brand new, it's kind of like eye-opening and mind-blowing to some degree, isn't it?
Oh, totally.
But then after 3 years, you kind of almost take it for granted. That's just normal. And you forget that other people don't know these things either, do you?
I know. And we were just looking back as well. And part of the course is very much, it's all based on you, isn't it? Not you, me, on yourself. So we had to write things down, like what makes us happy, what's, and we're both looking back going, gosh, actually we do that now. We've let go of the bad stuff and we're living the life now, really, aren't we? And that's a big part of being a Czech coach, is actually living it and being the principles yourself.
Yeah. And it's made really clear when you do the course, because there's different levels you can go to. Once you do the first few courses, you can go further down the rabbit hole, because obviously if you're going to be a coach, there's people out there who are quite complex cases. So it takes a lot more understanding. But essentially the course that me and you met on, it's learn how to apply these principles to yourself so you can live it and then teach it, because you want to be authentic. If you're a living example of health and happiness and going after what you believe in, then it's so much easier and so much more effective to coach other people, isn't it? Because if you don't do it yourself and you try to teach someone, your chances of success are going to be pretty low.
Well, you wouldn't learn to play guitar off a teacher who couldn't play guitar, would you? So that's the way I look at it.
Yeah, it's a good point, yeah. And you can pretty much spot someone a mile off who isn't authentic, can't you?
Yeah, definitely. And that's one of the things that was instilled. I found it quite scary at first when you apply for the course. I was thinking that they're going to look at like how big you are or how Muslim you are or something. But it's like you have to live the lifestyle. And I think that both me and you do that to a certain degree, don't we?
Yeah, it was quite interesting because the majority of the people on the course were in the health and fitness industry.
Mm.
I've done this course twice, actually. There was also people there who were just parents and people who worked in jobs that didn't involve health and fitness, but they'd heard through multiple people that this was a good course just to live a healthier life. So they just went on the course just to improve their life. But by doing that, by being examples of health, they would improve their family, they would improve the work colleagues. And even since then, I know a few people have quit the job and moved into the health and fitness industry because of this, when that wasn't their intention in the first place.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool, isn't it?
I know. And we should mention that you have actually done this twice and you weren't meant to be on the course that we came on, wasn't it?
So that doesn't make me twice as intelligent.
I was going to say, like, you should be the master of this. Right. Should we crack on then? So we've got a few things we're going to go through. So the first one was, what's the difference between a holistic lifestyle coach and a normal PT? So what would you be looking, what kinds of things would we look at that we wouldn't necessarily do as a normal PT?
So in my opinion, in my experience, normal PTs, they're pretty well educated. It depends who you listen to, but in the physical, so just the way you move, the way the muscles work, things like that. But when you come to a holistic lifestyle coach, that's just one part of the structure, isn't it? So it's one part of the six foundation principles, which we'll come to talk about. So a HLC would try to assess someone. So assess the whole lifestyle. So what they eat, what they drink, how they think, what the dream is. Assess the physiological load, how much stress they're under. Because that all comes into account. Whereas a normal PT comes in that hour in the gym, they forget that there's a whole other life out there. You cannot leave all that baggage at the gym door, can you?
No.
So as a holistic lifestyle coach, you try and assess everything because you think, well, this person might be overweight, for instance. And then the old traditional approach might be, well, just work out more and eat less. But a HLC would take into account, well, they're working out 6 days a week already, but they're gaining weight. They're already in a calorie deficit. They're still gaining weight. So there's so many more factors like food intolerances, stress, sleep. So it's an overall approach is how I would best describe it.
I realized the difference when I'd done this course and then did HLC 2 as well and the exercise coach. Like when I was, people come to me as a Pilates teacher because they had bad backs. And mechanically, you can see why they've got a bad back and you can start fixing that mechanical kind of structural problem, which is quite easy to fix. But then if they are, and I always knew there was something else that I was missing, and this was what I was missing, and it's the stress that they're under, their diet, what they're eating, what they're drinking, how they're sleeping. It's the whole part of the body, the bits that you can't really measure or weigh that still make up your body, that until you fix all that stuff as well, the mechanical issue will continue to return and will never be properly fixed. And that's what this did. And that's what we do, isn't it, with people? So,
yeah. So physical and mechanical issues are often just symptoms of a deeper lying issue, aren't they?
Yeah.
So having a bad back or a bad knee, it might just be a physical issue. Like that, that is part of what we learn as well. But it could be so many other things. And if you just need to keep digging and digging and digging. It's like when a bucket fills with water, instead of tipping the bucket out every now and again, you need to fix the faulty tap, don't you?
Yeah.
And that's essentially what it is. You need to get to the root cause. And it's getting back to nature as well. A less is more approach was one of the main things I found. People want to do more, more, more all the time. More exercise, more tactics.
Mm.
A lot I found is it's stripping people back of what they think they need. And essentially, you don't need a lot. If you just do the basics, 95% of your problems will essentially clear themselves up.
Yeah. And like you say, getting back to nature, you know, I'm a big fan of that. And people just want a pill or they just want something that will make them better instantly. And it's not like that, is it? It's a whole lifestyle change. You can't just, like, even if you got medicine, you wouldn't just expect to take it once and then never to take it again and you'd be fit and well. This is something that you have to do every day. You have to work on your health, your mental health, your physical health, your emotional health. Every day you have to do with something little. I'm going to get back around to habits soon, aren't I, Dan? Yeah. But it is, it's your daily little habits that make big differences. And getting back to nature is one of those little things that you can do that will really help.
I think when you mentioned people just want a pill and they just want to be cured instantly. As a PT, I kind of get that a little bit, but people do have a bit more patience. They do understand it takes a little bit more time. Mm. But from speaking to people in the past, people who struggle with that in their profession as physiotherapists, they expect to lie down on the physio table for an hour and just stand up and be cured.
Yeah.
And I think physiotherapists struggle with that because they know as well that it takes time. It takes a lot of time. And yeah. people just want to pay the money, just cure me, you know what I mean? And it's until you find the underlying cause of the problem and work on your habits and fix it through daily practice, that's going to cause long-lasting change.
So as a PT, Dan, normally you've worked as a normal PT. And as a holistic lifestyle coach, what would you say would be the difference, that one thing that would make the biggest difference to a person, other than lifting weights and doing exercise and stuff like that?
Well, it would be a principle of exercise. So it's train, don't drain. That's kind of stuck with me, which means people often go to the gym and they just kill it. They walk out of there absolutely exhausted to the point where they even lost mental energy and the habits can take a dip. So you're that exhausted from the gym that you think, oh, I don't even care what I eat. I'm so hungry. I just need to eat something. So then you make an unhealthy choice. Whereas if you just backed off the workout a little bit and just did 40 minutes instead of an hour or an hour and a half, and you went to the gym 4 days a week instead of six, then you've got so much more energy to make healthier choices. So in the long run, you might think, oh, well, over this year, I've worked out like 50 days less, but you're in a better place. So it's that, it's not just more. You need to be effective in what you do.
It's that working in as well as working out, getting the balance right, isn't it? And yeah, making sure that. That's another thing that we do as HLC. Sometimes people come to me for exercise and I'm like, I don't want to add more stress to your system right now. So we'll look at breathing and doing breathing exercises, to the Tai Chi kind of style, of more flowing type of exercises rather than lifting weights or doing, you know, traditional Pilates moves. And people will kind of look at you funny going, well, I've come to you to get exercise, and you start giving them breathing exercises. It's like, but when you can see that they're under that much stress and exercise is another stress to the system, you can tell that that's not what they need. And that's something that I find quite hard to get over to people sometimes, because they like that feeling of working hard, you know, that burn feeling.
Yeah, and you can understand where people come from, because that's just what they've been taught. And to get that adrenaline rush and that dopamine when you go to the gym, particularly if you're lifting weights and things like that, it does feel good. But yeah, like you said, they're all stress summates. So your body doesn't know what different types of stress are. It just knows it's under stress. So if it's stress from a hectic job, or it's stress from unhealthy food, or stress from lifting weights, because you're just breaking the muscle down. You don't build muscle in the gym, you build it when you rest and recover. So I'm the same as you. I've had clients before and they've came in and you can tell they're just at level 10 stress. So instead of lifting weights or doing more strenuous stuff, we've just done working exercises and kind of slow Tai Chi and breathing. And you can almost just take a look at them and they just deflate a little bit. That's actually what I needed. But it's, with being a HLC coach, there's a lot of education involved as well, isn't there?
Yeah, I think that's one of the things. People just don't realise, and they think that they're going to the gym and they're doing good for themselves, when actually it could be doing more harm, breaking the tissue down. Like you say, if you're not getting the work in to balance it out, then you're in a complete, continual catabolic state. You're not getting that anabolic rest and rebuild kind of thing going on.
Yeah, and it's figuring out, it's coaching people and yourself, because I had to go through this process myself as well. Why are you actually doing it in the first place? So it's like, why are you going to the gym? Why are you eating the food that you're eating? Why are you doing that job? If you just feel a little bit lost and you don't have a dream or a why to go to, then everything just seems like chaos and there's no direction. So someone's going to the gym 7 days a week and they're absolutely annihilating themselves. And it might just become unconscious to some degree because they've done it for that long. But then you think, well, are you going to the gym because you love yourself and you're trying to be healthy? Or are you doing it to punish yourself because you're eating unhealthy food? And if you can try and surface out why you're doing something, then you're going to potentially get better results, aren't you?
Yeah, and that's our one love, isn't it? That's the first part of the program is what's your dream? What's your one love? I'll try not to sing Bob Marley. But, but it is, isn't it? Like sometimes when people come in, I can see that their backs are really sore or, and the stuff's not working. It's, and I sometimes just have a chat with them and say, what's your dream? What makes you happy? And I've had people burst into tears before, and it's actually confronting what is the root cause. Why can you not get physically better? And sometimes your body keeps the score. That's a really famous book title, by the way. I didn't just make that up. And by Professor Von Belk or someone. It's a really good book, actually. And it's about how emotional and mental trauma will manifest itself in your body. And it might not be straight away, but it'll be there somewhere. And your body's always keeping the score. So if you're doing something that doesn't give you purpose in life or you're not happy, then somewhere your body will let you know.
So muscles hold emotions, don't they? Which sounds a bit strange, but I think it's the psoas, or the hip flexor, which often gets referred to. That is the most chronically tight muscle in the human body, isn't it? And is it the only muscle that crosses from the upper body to the lower body? And it stores a lot of tension and emotion in there. So you can, like you said, you've had clients break into tears. So sometimes even if you just go through a series of stretches with people, because they're so tense all the time, they might be, for instance, in like an abusive relationship or have a boss that doesn't treat them very well. And for like 8 hours a day, they could be tense and they could be sat down and they just store negative emotions. And doing something as simple as opening someone up in a stretch, it can be pretty profound for people, kind of.
Yeah, I've had people cry when we've released the psoas muscle, and not because in pain. Just because, like you say, it's that release of energy that, oh gosh, yeah, all of a sudden, and they just have to let it all out. Sometimes I warn people now if I think that they're on the brink, and I'll say that if we do this stretch, it might actually make you cry. And it's a big, profound thing to release the psoas muscle. It does hold emotion. Absolutely.
So next up.
Okay. So the foundation principles, Dan. So these are the principles of everything. They're the foundation, right?
Yeah. This is the biggest thing I took away from going through the course the first time, especially. It seems so simple once you learn it, but for some reason, everyday life, you totally bypass these things. I always like to think of it as, well, it's in the title really, like a foundation. So if you build a house, but I always think like of building a pyramid. So if you get the base as strong and as stable and as solid as possible, then everything else going up to the pinnacle, all the fancy stuff, you can do all that stuff later, but just get the foundation right. And the chances of doing all the fancy stuff increase dramatically, aren't they?
Yeah, for me, the foundation principles are the key to everything. And whenever I'm feeling like overwhelmed in business or in anything really, overwhelmed or feeling like I'm getting sick quite a lot, you know, those low level kind of colds and stuff, which I rarely get, but if I am, I always go back to the foundation. Like, what am I not doing? What is not happening here? And in business as well, if I'm not going where I want to be going or not motivated, I go back to the foundations and I always think, right, what can I put in place that's going to help me? And it always works. And it's like you say, they're so simple, but get overlooked. It's like anything, isn't it? It's just when we tell you what they are, you're going to be like, oh, well, yeah. But actually listen, because they do make a massive, massive difference. And I reckon that most of the people I see with bad backs or, you know, like hormonal issues, 90% of them can be corrected by getting your foundations in place.
Yeah, I think in the manual that you get along with doing the HLC one course, it states that 90 to 95% of all disease and physical injuries come from not following the foundation principles correctly. So it's not just like a muscle injury or anything like that. It could be like long-lasting disease, things like cancers and things like that. And if you can correct your lifestyle practices, those things can clear up. But we're not taught that, are we? So
no.
Like, I didn't know these things before I did the course.
No.
But it does make sense. But you're taught in the medical system, it's a this for that approach. So take this pill, it'll cure that. But then comes a side effect of the pill. So you have to take another pill for that. And then down the rabbit hole you go, don't you? Whereas if you just went to bed an hour earlier and drank another liter of water, like something so simple could just alleviate all of those problems.
Yeah. Shall we go through them then?
Yeah, go on then.
What's the first one?
Well, there's six, isn't there? But there's no
order. They're not in any particular order, is there?
They're all as important as each other.
Yeah.
So sleep, hydration, nutrition, movement, thinking. Is that six or have I said five?
I think that's five. Which one have you not done?
Oh, breathing. Yeah.
Breathing,
yeah. Really important.
So shall we go through each one, do you think?
Yeah, we'll do a little point on each one.
Little point. So the first one, sleeping.
Yeah, so this is probably the most overlooked and the most important one, to be honest, in my opinion.
Oh, for me, sleeping. If I don't get enough sleep, well, I think I've spoken about it lots on this podcast.
Like a bear with a sore head.
Yeah, I'm a nightmare if I don't get enough sleep. And for me, sleeping is, when we talked about habits, it's the keystone habit. If I don't get enough sleep, then like my diet goes the next day, I start craving sugar, I start craving caffeine. That sends me off on that rabbit hole of my insulin levels going up and down, that roller coaster. It's just, it knocks everything to pot for me.
Yeah. And with sleep, there's a few things which you can do to really get the most out of it. A good point to remember is sleep is free as well. So you can go to all the fancy doctors and get all the fancy pills you want, but sleep is free and it's better than all of those. And a few tips as well. So you want to try and get into a good rhythm. I know probably all the parents out there who have young children are probably screaming at me right now. But
no,
if you can,
I got my kids into a good rhythm.
If you can get into a good rhythm and go to bed and wake up the same time every day, your body likes routine, doesn't it? And it responds really well. And if you can ideally get to bed by 10 p.m., you should sleep roughly between 10 and 6. You can give or take a little bit, but that's in general. You want to go to bed when the sun goes down and rise when the sun comes up. Again, go back to nature. That's how your body has come to what it is now. So 10,000 years ago, when there was no electricity and it was just campfires and moonlight, then you couldn't stay up all night because it was dark. So you would just sleep when the sun went down. That's how the body is built. But so yeah, if you can get to bed by 10 p.m. and roughly get up by 6, because your body does its physical repair between 10 and 2 and the mental repair between 2 and 6. So if you all think you're missing out on, if you go to bed at 1 in the morning every night, that's 3 hours of physical repair you've missed. So if you go to the gym and you absolutely kill it and your muscles are broken down, then you miss 3 hours of physical repair, and then you wonder why you're sore for like 5 days after your workout. Then if you can just get back to those basics and just get that 3 hours of sleep over 7 days, over 7 months, 7 years, it all adds up, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I think you've covered it all there, Dan. Apart from, I would say, make sure that you're in a sleep in a bat cave, I always say, dark and cold.
Yeah.
And have the right temperature, because your body temperature drops, isn't it, when you go to sleep. It needs to be at a certain temperature to get good sleep. So I think people sleep in too hot rooms and then their body temperature can't drop to the right place.
Yeah, and try and get away from screens as well, like mobile phones or televisions, because your body interprets that as sunlight, doesn't it? So it can keep you awake.
Don't you wear those special glasses?
Yeah, the blue light blockers, yeah.
Yeah. So there's some special glasses that you can get that block out the rays, because it's the cones at the back of your eyes, isn't it? So the screens, they recognize the light that's emitted from the screens as daylight. So when you're staring at a screen, the cones in the back of your eyes are interpreting that as daylight. So your brain's not releasing the melatonin that it should be rising to make you go to sleep. So if you're sitting at your screens all night and then try to shut off, your brain still thinks it's daylight. You need a twilight. Our bodies are designed for twilight. So if you are working later on a screen at night, you should be wearing special glasses like what Dan has.
Yeah. I'll get a photo of the special glasses and I'll upload it.
Yeah, we should put it on the show notes.
Yeah, but you can even get apps for your phone or your laptop that reduce the amount of blue light, can't you?
Yeah, I have mine turned right down. Like if anyone sees my phone, they're like, why can't you turn this up? And I'm like, no, it hurts my eyes.
Yeah, so turn it right down. And if you want to be a true hippie, you can turn it off like an hour before you go to bed and just like read a book by the candlelight.
True hippie. That's just like my life.
Cool. So what's number two?
Number two is thinking. Stinking thinking, as Paul Check would say. Have you got stinking thinking? So, like what Dan, did you mention this before? I don't know if, no, you didn't. We were talking before we came online and we were noticing some of our quotes. And one of the quotes was 95% of your thoughts are this exactly the same today as they were yesterday. And 90% of those thoughts are negative. Now, that was quite profound for me because it's true, isn't it? The stuff that you worry about, it's the same as the stuff that you worried about yesterday. And has worrying about it made any difference?
I think it's something like 67,000 thoughts a day, and like 60,000 of those are negative. And I think there's some research behind it, which there's a reason behind that. It's because you want to avoid those negative things. So it's like a survival mechanism. But we live in a very, very safe environment these days. And we just imagine things are unsafe.
Yeah.
So if you can try and get some positive thoughts, some affirmations, and just try and recognize the negative thoughts. So at least like awareness is the first step towards change, isn't it? So just become aware that you're thinking negatively. So then you can, it's a step towards change.
And we've talked about the inner dickhead before as well, haven't we? Who we've all got inside our head sitting there going, you're not good enough. You can't do this. Any business decision that you want to make, any life decision you want to make, you've got to get past that inner dickhead. And, you know, like we said in the other podcast, I think if we were to be a friend with someone who spoke to us like we speak to ourselves, would we be friends with them? So why do we do it to ourselves? And then who's the voice inside your head that's answering? Like that's what gets me. It's like we've got one voice going, yeah, you're not good enough. And then the other voice kind of like, is that the true you? Is that where you get to?
Yeah, that's when it becomes important to just, a lot of people, like including me, you almost to some degree become scared of your own thoughts. Like imagine if you're just in a room by yourself for the next, whatever, 10 days and you had no television or phone and you just had to become aware of your own thoughts. It's scary, but it's important because you need to interpret what you're thinking. Think, why am I thinking that? But if you can, if you become aware of them in the first place, then you can start to change them, can't you?
Yeah, and the first rule of any change is to get your mindset right. There's no point, like I'm just about to launch into a new program and one of the first things I'm going to have everyone doing is some goal setting and some mindset training around, you know, what do you want to achieve? How are you going to achieve it? It's all that kind of stuff that you need to do to get your head in the right place, because if you set out on a road to go to a destination with a map, You plan your route, don't you? You don't just say, right, I'm going to go to Scotland and then off you go without a plan. So that's what this is, whole mindset and thinking. It's getting your goals down. What do you want to achieve? When do you want to achieve it? And in business as well, I have lots of goal setting and measurements. Lucy will be listening to this going, yes, KPI trees, that kind of thing. But it's all about mindset training and getting your head in the right place.
Yeah, exactly. So you need to, if it's goal setting and things like that, your dreams are just a snapshot of your future, said Albert Einstein.
At you.
So
I've got that one written in my book as well.
Yeah. So essentially though, like you said about the roadmap, which is a really good thing. If you don't know where you're going, then any road will do, won't it? So you kind of, you need to at least point yourself roughly in the right direction. Well, then how do you know if you've achieved your goal if you didn't know what it was in the first place or where you were going? And the thing with this foundation principle, the one analogy that always gets me is just thoughts become things. Whatever you think, that happens to you, doesn't it? If you think the worst all the time, you're going to interpret that as, oh, this is terrible. But if you just try and change the perspective, like whatever happens, a lot of the things that happen in your life, you can't really change, but you can change your reaction to that, to what happens, can't you?
Yeah, I've got two quotes for you, Dan, here that sprung to mind while you were talking. One is Henry Ford's, whether you think you're right or you're wrong, you're right. And my second one is from Tony Robbins, what happens if life is happening for you, not to you?
I like that one as well.
Yeah, that's quite a profound one, isn't it? It's not, life isn't happening to you, it's happening for you. That's kind of like there's a greater plan out there for you.
Yeah, it's just that interpretation. It's like when you go through difficult times, it's like there's always a lesson there to learn, to get through. That's what I like to look at it as. And it's hard to think that at times when you're going through tough times like we all do. but there's something greater there to learn, I always find.
Yeah, me too. Okay, we're getting very profound now, Dan.
Yeah, we'll move on to something a bit more lighthearted.
So we've done sleeping, thinking. Number three, eating?
Nutrition, yeah.
Nutrition, yeah.
Now this is, as a coach, I must admit, this is a difficult one to get people to understand nutrition a bit more. It's because eating is such a habit that it's hard to break because they're addictive substances like sugar and dairy and fat, things like that. So the first step is trying to educate people a little bit more and try and take baby steps and bridge the gap. But you literally are what you eat, and you are what your food eats, essentially, if you eat animal products. So try and think, like, your cells replenish themselves all the time. I think the latest research shows that you literally are a new human being within 1 year. So all your cells have replaced. So if you think, in a year's time, what do you want to be made of? Do you want to be made of, like, organic, vibrant, wild animals and vegetables? Or do you want to be made of
chemicals,
fast food, yeah, genetically modified? Like, cause that's essentially, if
chlorinated chicken.
Yeah, chlorinated chicken. Yeah, that's the latest one, isn't it? But what do you want to be? Because that is, you are what you eat. Whatever you put in your mouth is the building blocks of what you're going to be in a year's time. And it's, if you break it down to that, then it kind of, for me, it always seems a bit more, like, the choices are a little bit easier to make. I'd rather spend a little bit more on organic food because I want to be healthy and vibrant.
Yeah. And you know, I think people overcomplicate nutrition. Like, you've got to have your macros, you've got to have your calories, you've got to do this, you've got to do that. I think, gosh, just eat fresh fruit, veg, locally produced, organic, do your best with what you can. I know organic's more expensive, but there's the, is it the Dirty Dozen and the Clean 13, 15. Yeah. 15. Yeah. So try, I think it's strawberries and things that are the highest, and apples, highest chemicals on them. So it's, if you can buy certain foods and fruits are organic, then that's, we'll hunt that out and put it in the show notes if we can, what the list is.
So yeah, and it's a bit of a misconception that it's more expensive as well. So on the shelf, they probably are, if you put the regular apples next to organic apples, there's probably like a 10% difference, maybe a little bit more. Mm. But if you, there's the whole nutrition thing and actually being satiated when you eat your food. So if you eat food that has no nutrition, you finish your meal and you're hungry like an hour later, and then you eat something else, compared to eating like an organic meal and actually having some nutrition on board, and that's going to keep you satisfied and fueled for longer. So you eat less, which costs less. So it's just, it's a misconception that organic is more expensive in the long run. It's probably not.
Yeah. Also, I find when I eat properly, like, your sugar cravings go, you're not eating on all the crap all the time. And it just, that's what your body needs, isn't it? And I think we all know how to eat properly, but doesn't normally come with an advert. That's why I always remind some of my clients that foods with adverts are normally the ones that are bad for you. So you never see an advert for an apple.
There's a few really simple things like that, which people may laugh at, but it works. So it's, if you can't pronounce an ingredient on the back, then you shouldn't really eat it. Can you pronounce apple? Can you pronounce carrot? Like, that's the one ingredient, but you buy like a so-called protein bar and it's got hydroxychloroethylamine E35 and you can't even pronounce it. You're like, well, if you can't pronounce it, you shouldn't really be eating it.
So I think nutrition is one of those things that gets overcomplicated, and it's actually quite simple. And we just need to just strip it all back again. It's not less is more, isn't it? Again, all of these principles are less is more. So number four is hydration.
Your body is approximately 75% water.
Like the earth.
Yeah, there's some key correlations, isn't there?
Yeah. Babies are 90% water. You know that.
And they're born without, you know, babies are born without kneecaps. But then they grow, the cartilage grows and they formed as you become an adult.
They've got more bones than us as well, haven't they?
Yeah, there we go.
So anyway.
back to hydration. So if the human body is 75% water and you don't drink any, then how, it doesn't matter if you get the other foundation principles perfect. If you're not drinking enough water, then everything's going to go downhill.
Yeah, I was. I shared a really interesting video the other day into my group by Tom Myers, you know, of anatomical trains guy, the guy who wrote about the fascia and the, anatomical trains through the body. And it's entitled, and I thought it was really good, "Are You Aging or Just Drying Out?"
Yeah, it's true.
And it was about how, and he doesn't necessarily mean hydration as in the amount of water that you drink, although yes, that's very important, but he meant as in the muscles and the fascia of your body. So the way that he said it was, you know, when you're walking in sand, wet sand, and you put pressure on and the water goes outwards, and then it, when you take the pressure off, it fills back in. He said that's like lifting a weight. So if you lift a weight, your bicep contracts. So that's pushing the water out. And then when you release it, after you've done all your weight, your sets, all the blood and the nutrients and everything rush back in. And that's what builds the muscle. But he was saying, so if you do the same exercises, you're only hydrating the same areas. And it's about pushing those nutrients into the areas and hydrating the whole of your body. So that was quite interesting, I thought, that he's talking about the hydration of the tissues, as well as obviously the hydration of by drinking a lot of water as well.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. I found an interesting fact that when you, if you go through like a long, rigorous stretching routine and stretch places, which you haven't maybe done for a while, like you feel really thirsty afterwards. Mm. And you think, well, I haven't even done anything particularly strenuous to make me thirsty. But it's because you're releasing a lot of toxins that can be stored as well in areas which haven't been opened up for a while. Mm. And the main way your body gets rid of toxins, it needs to dilute them first, doesn't it? Which it uses water, so you get more thirsty.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah, and there's a few good quotes which come with drinking water. I thought, me and you love a quote.
Oh, we love a quote. Come on then, Dan. What's
yeah,
a quote?
The first one that springs to mind is hydrate before you medicate.
Ah.
So you might have a migraine, and you might want to start taking some pretty strong painkillers. But what if you're just so dehydrated that you have a headache? Drink some water first before you start putting poisonous medication into your body.
Yeah.
And the one that me and you like the most, which we always say is the solution.
Oh, yes. The solution to pollution.
Solution is dilution.
Dilution.
Yeah. That's one of my favorite ones ever.
I was saying that this morning, actually, to someone. I can't say it all the time. It's so true. And drinking water, it's so simple. It's a simple thing to do, but it's so necessary. I think in your body, isn't it 90% of every function in your body, breathing, digestion, anything, is it requires water. So not getting it into your system is kind of like just slowing the whole process down, really.
And people say, well, how much water should I drink as well? Well, there's a few kind of really basic things to remember. Have a look at your, like when you go for a wee, if it's bright yellow, then you know you're dehydrated. Even if it's like champagne color, yeah, then you're still dehydrated. It should be clear. There's a calculation you can do which tells you how much water you should be drinking, because there could be quite a big discrepancy for someone who weighs 7 stone to someone who weighs 15 stone. There's a big difference. Like you're going to need a lot more water. But there's actually a calculation, and we'll get it in the show notes.
It's really important. And sometimes when you work it out, I think mine works out about 2.5 liters a day. And when I first started, I was like, I cannot drink that much water a day. It's like ridiculous amounts. But then just start off with 1 liter a day. And then the next week you do 1.5 liters a day, the next day. And once you start drinking water, yes, for the first week or two, you dash into the toilet all the time because it just goes straight through you. But then your body gets used to having it, and then it reabsorbs quite quick. A good top tip for not going straight through you is to put a bit of salt in. A little bit of Himalayan rock salt or Celtic salt is the best ones, I think. And that, it's not so you can taste it, so you're not drinking like really like seawater. That takes the pH of the water to the same as what your gut is. So your gut can use it straight away without having to think I'm getting overloaded and needs to flush it out. So there's a good top tip for you.
Yeah, it's a good tip, because if you're drinking tap water, then a lot of it's just dead water, really. There's no trace minerals or things like that. So if you add some good sea salt, not just table salt, which is pretty poisonous, but if you add some good quality sea salt, then it adds all those trace minerals back in. So that's how water's meant to be, essentially, isn't it?
Yeah. And I just think I can tell on days when I don't drink enough water, I feel like sluggish. I feel like I get bad heads. Everything just goes wrong. That's probably another keystone habit of mine that I know instantly when I've not done it, is drink enough water.
It's important to know that water has no substitute. So coffee and juices and things like that.
That's what I was just going to say.
Yeah. Well, they're not the same as water, so they don't hydrate you. Is it water is the only thing that doesn't go through the, like you consume it, doesn't go through the digestive tract?
Yeah, I think so.
So anything, so if you think, oh, it's just cordial, it's got some juice or whatever, it's tea, it's coffee, that has to be digested as well. And it can often dehydrate you because the digestive system uses pure water to function.
Yeah.
So water has no substitute. If we say 2.5 liters of water, that is water. It's not tea or coffee or whatever.
Yeah. And a lot of women as well who have hormonal problems, especially in perimenopause, one of the ways that the liver gets rid of excess estrogen is out via excretion. So people tend to get bunged up, which then holds the hormones in your body longer, and then they get recirculated around your system. So making sure that you're going to the toilet regularly is absolutely massively important whenever you're having any hormonal problems, because otherwise your body just reuses all those hormones that aren't getting out of the system.
It's all really important, but it's good to know the facts of actually why, because everyone knows you should drink water, but if you can reinforce it with a few kind of key points, then hopefully the next bit will get hydrated.
Absolutely. Okay, we're on to number 5, Dan. Breathing.
This is quite relevant for me at the moment because I've been doing the old Wim Hof method.
Oh, yeah. Tell us about the Wim Hof method again, Dan, because I know you're a guru of his now.
So Wim Hof is actually a Dutch bloke.
Is that his official title?
He's a Dutch bloke. So he developed a breathing method which is really simple to follow, but it has pretty profound effects when you do it. So essentially it's 30 to 40 really big inhales, like try and breathe through the diaphragm and not just the chest. And you do a partial exhalation. So it's just like, you know, when you do a sigh. Mm-hmm. So it's fully in as much as you can, then just partially breathe out. So if you do that
for,
but you do it quite quick. So your body over oxygenates is the way I would describe it. You might get like kind of lightheaded and a tingling sensation in your fingers is what I found, and kind of ringing in the ears as well. So you over oxygenize your body. And then after 40 times, you just release the breath and you just hold your breath for as long as you can. And it kind of gives you an idea of how important fresh oxygen is to your body. Because after those 40 breaths, I sit there sometimes 3, almost close to 4 minutes without even taking a breath.
Wow.
Feel so at peace. It's really strange. And then, so then when your body is really crying out for another breath, you take what's called a recovery breath. And so you breathe in really deeply. And then you just hold that for 15 seconds. And those 15 seconds, it's like euphoria. Your body, after not having oxygen for 4 minutes, then gets this fresh influx of fresh air. And you just hold your breath for only 15 seconds, but you just feel absolutely electric. And for me, when you do it, it just reinforces the fact that breath is so powerful. That's what I get from it, yeah.
I think it's one of the most overlooked things for reducing stress, for improving your health. I see it every day. Every day, people sit in a forward posture, typing away, their diaphragm's getting compressed, so they're not using the diaphragm. They then use the auxiliary breathing muscles, which are in the shoulders and the neck. They get really tight necks and shoulders because they're doing the breathing, which are not meant to be, not the breath muscles. So it's like just fixing your breathing would help fix neck pain, fix back pain, stop migraines happening. It's key, really. And the amount of people who I see, and you'll see as well every day, who don't breathe properly, it's very concerning, really, when you think how much stress and discomfort are in the world.
Yeah, as a rule of thumb, when you breathe, you should breathe for the first 2/3 should be in the diaphragm, and then the third should be into the final third should be into the chest. So if you put one hand on your belly button and the other hand on your chest, when you breathe, so the first 2/3 your belly should expand, and the final third your chest should expand.
Yeah.
So it's just a good little kind of tip if you want to figure out how your breathing technique is.
Yeah, and when you breathe, it makes your spine move. So if you just sit up properly and start breathing, you'll notice that your spine lengthens and shortens. And that lengthening and shortening of your spine is also a kind of a pump, peristaltic wave, it's called, that sends nutrients up and down the spinal column. So it's really important as well, not just to get oxygen in your body, but to maneuver everything around your body as well. Joseph Pilates said that it's the first act of life and the last act of life. And it is. And it most people don't really bother about it between those two times, but it's something that we should be focusing on.
Yeah, breath is life. I don't know whether it's just me because I'm doing the whole Wim Hof thing at the moment, but I think it's becoming a bit more, I don't want to say mainstream, but people are a little bit more concerned about breath and this breathing courses. Mm. Yeah, so I hope it does become more and more.
I hope so.
Kind of obvious because it's so important, because if there's the whole thing I like to remember with breath is you can go 3 weeks without food, 3 days without water, but 3 minutes without oxygen. Again, you can do all these fancy tactics to improve your health. If you die after 3 minutes without breath, then that shows you how important it is. So if you improve your breathing to a point where if you focus on your breathing as much as you focused on your workout in the gym, chances are your health will improve.
And the diaphragm as well, when you correctly use this diaphragm, it's one of the biggest pumps in the body after the heart. So if you think the heart's pumping circulation in your blood around your body, the diaphragm is, you know, the lymphatic system doesn't have a pump and the endocrine system doesn't have a pump. So those systems are relying on you moving, and breathing is one of the first acts of movement, I guess. So if you breathe properly, all of those things are get circulated around your system and out of your system as well. So
it's really important. I think we should finish with Wim Hof's famous quote about breath.
Go on then.
Breathe, motherfucker.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Sums it up.
Whoa, that's just woken up all our listeners. Yeah. Love it. Right, last one of the foundation principles. Then we're going to do the four doctors. Haven't got time for this.
I think we need to do another episode.
Yeah. Okay. Last one, Dan, is movement.
Movement. Okay. Something that comes natural to us all.
Well,
but we become unnatural we don't do it enough. Yeah.
Yeah. We lose it, don't we?
This one's funny because me and you, even if we didn't do the other six foundation principles correctly, we would still move every day because we're coaches. We move, don't we?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny because you were just speaking previously about how the body uses the organs and the muscles and things as pumps. That's essentially, if you move, you use your body as a pump, and it can increase your health just by doing simple things, can't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And movement, it doesn't have to be like, I think exercise, like we have to go and do some exercise. That's a very modern concept. Like if you think even back, I don't know, 40 years ago, they wouldn't go to traditional exercise classes. They'd just be moving. We've invented so much stuff that has stopped our movement, like washing machines, like cars. Everyone's got a car now. Nobody bikes anywhere, although that's starting to get more popular. But if you think about it, we've got all these labor-saving devices. And I think we've become creatures of, what's that word where they're in a zoo?
Captive.
Creatures of captivity. We're being held captive. We don't have to move anymore. It's something that's necessary. We're humans. We're built to move. We've got to move. And like I was saying before about how you're aging or drying out, you've got to get fluids and the hydration around to all the tissues as well.
On the flip side, there's people who move too much. They might go to the gym or go to exercise classes far too much. So they work out too much, and what little resources they have on board, they use them up. So they're constantly tired and they think, oh, well, I go to the gym all the time, but I'm putting weight on. It's because you're doing too much. So you need to work in as opposed to work out.
And also they're probably doing too many repetition of the same movement as well. So I like to think of posture as like a tree, you know, like trees don't just grow straight up. The environment creates the tree, and that's like us. Our environment creates our posture and the way that we move. It depends what we're doing every day, how are we walking, everything. So I just think that we need to be more conscious of just learning how to move correctly, because I think people have forgotten about that, and moving more often.
So move well, move often.
That's what I was trying to say.
Yeah, move well, move often. And it's funny you should talk about the posture, and it ties into things like emotions as well. So you can always tell someone who is depressed because they have the shoulders down, that you can tell they try and cover themselves up.
Persona,
essentially, yeah. Get someone who's really confident. Like you talk about Jordan Peterson, you've read his book. What's one of his principles? Stand up tall with your shoulders back. Mm-hmm. And even just improving your posture consciously can improve your mood and your emotions, can't it?
And also your breathing, and then the way you're thinking. So all of these principles link to each other. Yeah. And if you get them all down, then they'll have like a knock-on effect to the next one. If you start sleeping properly, you'll probably start eating properly, which then will make you start drinking properly and improve your mindset and get your breathing. So they're all kind of fluid, aren't they? They're not in isolation either.
Yeah. Your body is a cybernetic system. So it is.
Oh, good one, Dan.
You kind of change one and not have a knock-on effect on the other one.
Yeah.
Like, and that works both ways. So imagine if you started getting up at a normal time every day. So if you slept from 10 till 6, chances are your nutrition's going to be a lot better, as opposed to going to bed at 2 in the morning. You got a bigger chance of drinking alcohol and eating a takeaway. You're not going to get up at 6 a.m. and get a glass of wine and a pizza, are you? But if you stay up till 2 in the morning, yeah. But you know what I mean? So if you improve your sleep, your food's probably going to improve.
Yeah.
People who work out in the morning, so they get up and they do a healthy workout, chances are the food and the hydration is going to be good for the rest of the day, because they've got those happy feelings and the endorphins of going to the gym, and they feel good about themselves for doing it. So why would you want to ruin that?
Yeah, exactly. And I always think, like, my classes laugh at me, because when I'm doing stretches and stuff, I love a good stretch. It's like, why don't people do this? This feels so good. You know, if you just stretched a bit and get all the aches and pains out, it's all good. And as you get older, it becomes even more important to move and lift weights and do all the other stuff as well.
Yeah, I need to take that advice a little bit, to be honest. I need to stretch more.
You need to come to Pilates again.
So yeah, like, we're saying all these things, but like, we aren't perfect by any means.
Oh God, no, everyone's a work in progress, I think.
Yeah, of course, and you have good days and bad days, but if you can understand the principles, it's a little bit easier to get back on track and realize that these things are really important.
Yeah, and again, it doesn't have to be complicated. Walking is one of the best things for human movement. So get out for a half an hour walk every day in nature, breathe, take a bottle of water. Get your mindset done. Listen to Tony Robbins.
Yeah, and if the whole getting healthy thing can often, it can be overwhelming for people as well, like they don't know where to start. But the antidote to complexity is simplicity. Like you said, get a bottle of water and go for a walk. You know water's good for you. You know fresh air is good for you. And you know being outside in nature is good for you. And walking is good for you. And like, how simple is it to go for a walk with a bottle of water? So just simplify it. And then if you want to get more complex with different tactics in the future, at least you've built a good foundation.
Yeah. So those are our 6 foundation principles. We're not going to have time for the only 4 doctors that you ever need. So I think we're going to have to do that next episode.
Yeah.
Because they're good as well. We'll probably talk for about an hour on them.
I know. Like we said at the start, we probably could have done a mini series on this, but I think it's fascinating, and hopefully the listeners have got some good tips.
So where can we find you, Dan?
The best place to find me is on Facebook at Daniel Purvis Health and Fitness. What about you?
It's organicpilates.co.uk, or you can join my new group on Facebook, which is called Menopower Power. It's all things that can go right with your body during menopause.
And it's got a really catchy title, the name, which is obviously important.
It's massively important. It's all in the name.
Yeah.
So next week we're going to be talking about 4 doctors, the only 4 doctors you'll ever need to visit. Yeah,
it kind of expands on the 6 foundation principles, or the overlap, should I say, a little bit. But hopefully it reinforces the point, and it's a little bit of a different take on it, and it's interesting, isn't it?
And it's something that we do as holistic lifestyle coaches as well. We do assessments of these as well, don't we?
Yeah. So if you like this episode and you got some good tips out of it, let us know, leave us some comments, hit the subscribe button, and if you really liked it, then pass the pod.
Yeah, share the love.
Yeah, but if you didn't like it, then just keep it.
Don't share the love.
Just keep it your own little secret.
But you could share the love, because someone else might like it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, everyone has to live the 6 foundation principles if they want to be healthy. And who doesn't want to be healthy?
Exactly. And being healthy also helps everything in the world and your business and life.
Yeah. Great. So we'll see you next week for the 4 doctors.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.